Welcome to 30 Minute Reviews. I am Adam. Let's talk about some stories from today. We have three stories. As always, if there's anything you think we should address, feel free to email it in, 30minutereviews@gmail.com, and I will, if it's a topic to be knowledgeably on, we'll discuss it. So let's start out with the news that broke, I think it was late yesterday. Now, this could have been me reading a dubious source to begin with, that will lead to this confusion, but it is equally likely that it is accurate, and, you know, but it's also entirely likely that I fucked up. Now, a few years back, a book came out called The Children of Blood and Bone. Now, this book is a, what's it called? What's the word I'm looking for? It's a young adult fantasy book with Afrofuturism, and it had a lot of acclaim when it came out. A lot of people really liked it. Entertainment Weekly did a beautiful piece about it that really garnered a lot of attention, and it had a lot of attention. It had a sequel, and then I think either late this year or next year, the third in the trilogy comes out. So that whole, that happened. Unsurprisingly, shortly after the book fell onto my radar, which I don't know how long it was between coming out and the Entertainment Weekly article that I read, how long it was, after that, the book was said to be by a source online, and again, I could have gotten this from a dubious source and just reported on, like, oh my god, they're doing this. This is great. It was reported that this was in development at Lucasfilm. And Lucasfilm would be developing a movie based on this book. And that seemed cool. And I was like, oh, okay, awesome. They're going to do, they're going to make this movie. And it's good because Disney needs to diversify their Lucasfilm brand. Because, quite honestly, I think Star Wars is not enough to warrant the branding. And it's also going to be a problem, if we look like long-term, like every other studio under the Disney banner is making, money, and yet here we are with the Star Wars one struggling. I mean, merchandise sales are still high, but box office and content-wise, it's not doing gangbusters. So, like Marvel making a lot of money, Pixar makes a lot of money. I think that, they needed to diversify their portfolio there a little bit, besides just Indiana Jones and, Indiana Jones and Star Wars, and I think Willow might be under it too, don't quote me on that, but, they need to diversify a little bit, and then what happened was yesterday it was announced that Paramount had acquired the rights, and now this article I know is legit because it comes from Variety, and Variety's an industry standard. If it's not reported on by Variety, I don't know if it's entirely, you can't judge the accuracy unless it's like, Variety, Deadline, Hollywood Reporter. Variety just my go-to of the bunch. They really need an app. I wish they had an app. So that's cool. That's going to be coming, at some point in the future, but that book has been optioned by Paramount. Hopefully it goes theatrical and not Paramount Plus exclusive. I don't think Paramount Plus, as a streamer, has the cachet to not do it justice. They can do a beautiful thing with it, because they're going to sink money into their Paramount Plus content, the same way Disney has sunk money into their Disney Plus, the same way that all the other streamers, or HBO Max and the others, have sunk money into their streamers. I just don't think that there's enough, there to warn people signing up for it. And I don't think that, the book is widely known enough to the point where it's going to be a subscription driver. I could see it going theatrical and finding its audience. And again, I could be completely wrong. I don't know, because the thing is, it's like, there was a, like, I never really saw, like, at Barnes & Noble, a big, like, amount of location, like, designated to Children of Blood and Bone the same way other young adult series have, like, that other one that was just made into Netflix, There's another one that's, I think it's more mid-grade, but it does have a large place. And of course, Harry Potter has its huge, you know, location where it's, like, you know, loud on display, and you can see it, you know, for better or for worse, there pretty easily. So I think that that's something that, you know, kind of needs to be, like, I don't know if addressed is the right word, but definitely needs to be, you know, handled. And either way, I'll watch it. I have Paramount Plus, as I have T-Mobile. You get Paramount Plus for free with T-Mobile. Otherwise, I wouldn't have Paramount Plus. But, you know, I don't think that it going to Paramount Plus would necessarily be the best thing. Because I don't think, for me at least, I don't think it's necessarily a ratings driver for me to enroll in something I don't already have. Because Foundation didn't get me to get, what's it called? Foundation did not get me to get Apple TV. There really hasn't been anything to get me to get Apple TV. It's, again, I get it for free with T-Mobile. If I didn't have T-Mobile, I would not have Apple TV. So yeah, I think that this is going to be an interesting thing when it does come to theaters. There was another one, Kindred, the Octavia Butler classic at this point, is going to Hulu, which is going to be cool. Octavia Butler is a great science fiction writer. If you have never read, and I feel like an asshole now because I just said she's great, and I read one of her books very recently. What the fuck was it called? It's Earthseed. I forgot what the first one's called. But it is very good, very much worth your time to read if you're into science fiction. And I feel like a shithead for not being able to, remember the name of it. But yeah, that's gonna be cool. The next big story is, Justice U. The new show reportedly in development at the CW. And what that show is Diggle, John Ramsey, or David Ramsey, John Diggle, David Ramsey, from Arrow, is going to assemble a team of metahumans to make his own, like, Young Justice League, I guess, is what we'll call it. And that'll be, you know, the thing. I'm for it. I think it's an interesting idea. It's better than having Diggle kick around the Arrowverse, or what's left of the Arrowverse after, you know, inevitable cullings happen. And I think it is how they're going to move forward with some of these characters. Like, I think that, you know, it says metahumans, but I think Mia Queen ends up on that team. XS could end up on that team. And if this show goes forward, I think that's the nail in the coffin for Legends. Because I don't think there's room on the network for two super team shows. I don't think that... Not that, you know, the network can't handle it, but I think that if I have to choose between the two, I think Legends has kind of run its course a little bit. I've lost interest in Legends, to an extent. I'm not up to date on Legends. It's good that they went this long. I commend them for that, especially after how weak the first two seasons were, and how they really, like, for me, Legends rebounded after the Legion of Doom started in season two, when with like that big reveal of the Legion of Doom at the end of season one, where it's you know, Damian Dark, Reverse Flash, and who was the other one? I forgot who the other one was. But yeah, that, like, when they did that big and that was where they were going with the Staff of Destiny, or the Spear of Destiny, that's where they were going. It was cool. And then they brought in other cool ideas. I'm not, you know, discounting them. They've done cool stuff on the show. I'm not saying they haven't. I'm saying that, you know, in a world where we're going to have and the thing is too, salaries are going to come into consideration, where it's like, well, we can continue paying these people these prices to be on this show, or we can move on and we can go to a new group. Like, yeah, we're gonna have to pay a little bit of money because they're gonna be able to demand a little bit of money from us, but we're not gonna, you know, it's not gonna be as bad as picking up a new, an entirely new season of Legends where it's like, we gotta pay, you know, the guy who plays Gary, we gotta pay the woman who plays Mona if she's still on the show. Sarah Lance is gonna be going into her 7th season, and that's expensive. And especially if it's like, you know, Barry Allen. If we're gonna do The Flash, it's like, well, we gotta pay Grant, like, a sizable amount of money for season 9, because it's scale. And the number of seasons that you're on the show, the more you get paid. And then after a certain point, you're going to end up with more money than, You're going to end up with more money than you are, than money coming in. It's going to cost more than you're getting in profit. And I sound like I'm having a stroke, but I promise I'm not. So I think that in the grand scheme of things, this is going to be, you know, where it goes going forward, because I can see them bringing in characters from across the Arrowverse and being like, well, look, we're doing this again, but with characters, you know, who had a more active role in the shows that you love, where it's like, look, I like, if it's Mia and either Bart or XS, I'll watch that show. I think that could be an interesting path to take with, and I think I pitched this idea 2 years ago. Where it's like, just do, like, when, I think I pitched it when Green Arrow and the Canaries didn't get picked up, and I was like, look, just do the 2040s, where it's, you know, a team of people from this time period, where it's not just, you know, you're not just getting viewers from Arrow, because Arrow was hemorrhaging viewers toward the end. It's, you know, you want to do that. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this. I hope this goes forward. This, along with, the other one, Gotham Knights, is gonna. DC is not going anywhere on the CW, even as the CW is, you know, impending a sale. And I think that these shows, if they get picked up, I have a feeling they probably won't get canceled, because I feel like there's a sizable amount of the fan community who's like, no, I like these shows. Like, you know, I'm not the only one who watches them, evidently, because Naomi pulled 800,000 people last night. So I think that there's a sizable fan base for these shows, and I think that if they were to go, like, no, we're not going to do it anymore, people would be like, well, I'm not interested anymore. Because I think there is a subset, albeit a small subset, of people who watch the shows but don't watch the movies. Or people who watch the shows and are like, look, I'll do that, and then also, you know, watch the movies. And it's like, well, you know, let's see how it goes. And our final story of the day, Luke Skywalker has had an encounter with a Jedi from the High Republic in the latest issue of the Star Wars ongoing comic, Star Wars number 20. And there's a bunch of stuff happening right now. I have not yet read the new, what's it called? The Fallen Star, Claudia Gray's new novel in the High Republic. I feel really bad about that. I also have not yet read the origin story of Marcian Rowe, which is out in comic form from Kevin Scott. Again, also feel really bad about that. But I, that's not to say that I won't. It's just when I get paid, I might. Now, all of that said, this asshole is definitely going to try and scoot over. Yeah, I knew it. I'm not going fast enough for you, buddy. On the left lane, the guy's not going fast enough. So, in the newest Star Wars comic, Luke goes to another planet that's similar to Octo, which is the planet he's exiled to at the end of, what's it called? At the end of, I guess, before The Force Awakens, but it's where Rey finds him at the end of The Force Awakens, is this planet on Octo. So, he goes to this new planet that's similar to Octo, but not it. And he finds another one of those tree things that's, like, the one on Octo, or Octu, or, Octu sounds too much like a sneeze, so Octo is what I'm gonna call it. So all of that said, he goes to this planet, and he's like, and he encounters a Force Echo, or a Force Vision, or I forget what the exact terminology was, but either way, he's able to communicate with it, and it is a Force projection, I guess, of Elzar Mann, who is a Jedi of the High Republic era. And because of this, he talks to Elzar Mann, and he starts learning about more of the Jedi. And it starts laying the groundwork for why Luke is who he is in The Last Jedi. And I think it works a little bit. Like, they introduced the concept in the High Republic of the Journeyman Jedi, which is a Jedi who is, like, not actively part of the Order, but still does stuff and is able to be called on if need be. So, like, the idea of that is a pretty cool concept, I think. So they bring him in that, you know, that's one of the things they introduce in the High Republic. Now, the idea of making Luke into one of these journeyman Jedi, it feels like an idea that, you know, would appease only a certain part of the fan base who is like, look, Luke wouldn't just give up. And then it's like, no, he didn't. He didn't put himself into exile. He just became a journeyman. He went out and he was, you know, looking for things. And that seems to be the route they're taking, where it's like there's a new book coming out this year about Luke who, in the aftermath of everything that happens, in the immediate lead-up to The Rise of Skywalker, about him looking for that Sith assassin who's there, or maybe it's like 19 years, so it would be like 20 years after Return of the Jedi. He's looking for that Sith assassin who is, who's trying to get to Exegol, and that's like, yeah, but then, like, what the fuck? Like, why would he go fuck off and not do anything for 19 more years? Like, I don't know. And the thing is, it's like, at that point, has Ben already turned? And what's going on with that? And I think the bigger thing is, this further highlights the problem with where the High Republic takes place. Because if they said the High Republic was just a portion of the era of the Old Republic, I think it would make a lot more sense. Because what happens is, so bear with me here. And keep in mind that I have not looked up the exact dates for some of these things, and it's also works of fiction, so I could just be wrong. So the Jedi-Sith War is what goes on with the, the Jedi and the Sith, as the name would suggest, and that is Darth Bane, if I remember my Star Wars history correctly. So while that's the case, and while Luke is dealing with, you know, and Luke, while the Jedi are dealing with that, that takes place 800 years before the High Republic, and that is, 200 years before the Skywalker saga. So that places the Old Republic at 1,000 years before, anything we know takes place. Okay, cool. So that's laid out, and that makes sense to me. Here's the problem on top of that. So if that's the case, and the High Republic is a, what's it called? And the High Republic is this thing that happened at this point. Before the Jedi-Sith War is the Jedi-Mandalore War. And Mandalore is in the Outer Rim. And the entire conceit behind the High Republic is unite the galaxy under, you know, under one rule, one galaxy, one people. So it's like, okay, all right, that all makes sense. Like, that's the plan. And the Nihil are people who oppose that. All right, so we're on the same page now about that. So that all happens. But then what about, you know, why didn't this happen sooner? Now, you can make the case that it didn't happen for the first 500 years because they're dealing with the fucking Jedi. And the Jedi are dealing with, you know, Mandalore and all of that. But the question becomes, why is it that, you know, they're not jumping in and doing something sooner? Like, why is it that they wait until this point to do anything about this? Where it's like, it is 1,000 years. And then 800 years from the fall of Darth Bane is the High Republic. So they had 800 years, and they're like, yeah, fuck it, we'll do it now. And it's like, well, no, that doesn't exactly track. Like, I can't look at this and be like, oh, that makes sense because of X, Y, and Z. Something had to have been happening in the galaxy at that point. Now, you know, there is always the argument of, like, what was going on with, like, hyperspace travel. Because, like, there is the indication that hyperspace travel is, like, not an incredibly recent discovery. But it is certainly a recent enough discovery where, in the you know, in the years before the Empire during the prequels, you know, Jedi starfighters need specialized adapters to go into hyperspace, but X-Wings can go into hyperspace in with no problem 20 years later. You know, that is something that can be, you know, pointed at and be like, oh, okay, so they're still actively developing this technology. But at the same time, it's like, well, why is it taking them so long to be like, we should really do this? Because I'm assuming, and I don't know too much about the Jedi Mandalorian War, it seems like they were just like, well, we probably should, you know, handle this problem at some point in the near future, you know. But I would assume it's partially because the Mandalorians wanted more power in the government. So, like, why did it take them another 1,000 years to be like, oh, well, you know, maybe we should probably be like, oh, let's not create a situation that'll lead to another one of these conflicts. So, I don't know. That's just me. I can't say one way or the other definitively that it is or is not the case. But I think that's one of those things that, like, I think that the issue with the High Republic being as focused as it is on, like, you know, showing what can be done with a united galaxy and what the problem is about, you know, the galaxy not being united, it being that close to the High Republic, I think that, you know, or, you know, that close to the current Republic and between, you know, major events that we know about, kind of doesn't, you know, fit properly, in my opinion. And this just kind of exacerbates that problem. So we'll wrap up there for today. Tomorrow we may have more news. Who knows? I am seeing Scream tomorrow. So we'll see what happens between now and then. So until then, have a great rest of your week.